Hi, my name is Mark. I'm the Prepper Guy, and this is a Prepper Guy podcast. In a world that's always changing and full of fear and confusion, and especially when it comes to prepping, I am a minimalist, and I like to be ready for anything that life may throw at us, whether it's bad, the end of the world, or just a flat tire on a deserted road.
Well, hi, everybody. It's Mark the Prepper Guy, and I'm back with another podcast. I'm kind of like the one of the bands in the 80s that releases a new album every couple years and hope the fans are still alert. But I wanted to talk a little bit about just some of the stuff I've been up to and maybe why I'm not doing podcasting as much, but that doesn't mean I don't love doing podcasting and hope you're a subscriber. One of the nice things about subscribing is then you just get, you know, kind of like a little reminder from iTunes when I have a new podcast out, so you don't have to keep checking and stuff. And then if you're following the Prepper Guy page or my group on Facebook, that gets alerted with new podcasts. So I've just been really kind of busy and working on some other stuff. I've been making some videos and trying to learn how to do that a little bit more efficiently because I want to get into Udemy. Udemy.com is kind of like an online university, and I had never heard of it. And then I was watching a video on something, and the guy mentioned Udemy, so I went and looked up and signed up as a instructor, whatever that is. And I wanted to put together some instructions or a class on nutrition and things like that, because I think it'd be kind of cool, and it's challenging, and I always love challenging. So that's kind of what I've been up to. And then winter, you know, it's just winter time, and ugh, God, I hate cold weather. Yeah. And so when I have a day off, I want to usually go out in my shop and work on some projects or something like that, but it's too cold. And then if I'm in the house, then my wife has all these projects that I should be doing. And then, so all the stuff I want to do gets put on the back burner, and then, you know, just life. So it's been a while, and I thought, you know, I'm kind of excited. It seems like the economy is picking up, getting a little bit of forward momentum. And, you know, yeah, the election is over, and so that always helps the economy. It doesn't matter who's running and who wins. Usually it's just the whole election process is kind of stressful for the markets and businesses and even consumers who's wondering what the hell's going to happen next. So it seems like it's going in a positive direction. Now, Trump's been doing some things to, you know, hopefully get our economy up and rolling by deregulation and all that. And, you know, when conservatives say deregulation, it doesn't mean we want to eat bad food or drink poison water. It just means that there's so much regulation bogging down businesses that when you remove them, you know, especially the mindless regulations, then it really, you know, helps kind of free up or get the momentum going again in business because, you know, regulations are just like, you ever seen those emergency truck ramps on the freeway? You know, if a truck's brakes fail or they're going down a really steep grade, closer to the bottom, there's usually an emergency truck ramp. And what that is just about 2.5 feet deep of sand or something soft and squishy. And once the truck pulls off into that, it just starts stopping it. And over, you know, a couple hundred feet or yards or whatever they are, they're not more than even an eighth of a mile long. That'll stop a fully running semi at full speed, runaway, whatever they weigh, going downhill. So there's a lot of momentum with that vehicle and just hitting a bunch of loose sand or cinders in my state, will slowly just stop a semi, no matter how big the load is. And this is kind of what regulations is like. You know, you get enough of that crap in front of you, and it's just going to slow the economy. And what happened, I have some friends in the town I live where I buy my e-cigarette, my vape juice, or whatever that stuff's called. I'm not really into all that vaping thing. I just like the nicotine, so I vape, but I don't have a, what do they call it, cloud maker vaporizer things that just dump vapor into the air. But I was talking to them, and they used to have usually two guys in there full time building, you know, the what are they called? Just their vaping things. And they would custom build them for people. They would work on yours if it was giving you some crap. They would kind of analyze what's going on. They'd look at your smaller vapor, you know, if you were having a problem, change the filters. They had a lot of flavors in there to you could sample. And then all of a sudden, they go, well, we got to change our business because the FDA has regulated this as a tobacco product and it falls under food and tobacco. And so they had to let go their two guys that were building the equipment and maintaining it or working on it for people, and they cut their staff. So I think overall, three people that were working there full time and doing pretty well, just they had to let them go. And it was all because they, you know, of a simple regulation that they said, well, you know, this is a tobacco-based product, even though it's nicotine, and yes, nicotine is in tobacco, but it's not really like you're smoking a cigarette. And so it just, you know, a small regulation that might make sense in a way, caused three people at one business that I know in a small town. So this affected, there's probably four vape shops in the town I live in or work in all the time. And so if each one of them just let go one or two people, that's, well, you know, six, eight people that are now looking for work or doing something else that had a good job and enjoyed their work. The customers dropped off quite precipitously after that because, you know, a lot of people would come in and go, hey, this isn't working, or hey, build me this or build a new coil for that. And then they'd buy some juice and some other stuff. And so everyone made a little extra money. And I asked the owner, I go, well, can't you have them be like subcontractors kind of in the same area of your store, but it's like a separate part of your store, kind of like a hair salon. They're heavily regulated and licensed, but you know, the owner of the store can sell other products, and yet the hairstylists are paying for the chair and they can continue doing business. And she said, well, yeah, I'm sure eventually that will be what happens, but right now there's no carve out for that. So, you know, these little regulations that we think are so life-saving really cause a lot of problems with businesses. And so with Trump, you know, removing a lot of the regulations or saying, well, if you're going to add one, you have to eliminate two, is a good start. It's not going to the road of tyranny or poison food. I mean, because I hear cases in the news all the time about salmonella outbreaks in America or bad water problems like in Michigan and all that. So all these regulatory agencies are in place and they're supposed to be protecting us, but still this stuff happens and there's no room for let the buyer beware anymore. You know, it's just like you assume you're safe with everything you eat and drink and touch because some regulatory agency is out there protecting your ass, but they drop the ball from time to time too. And then what happens? Well, you get salmonella, you know. Where's the regulatory agency over food when it comes to all the radiation now in the Pacific Ocean from Fukushima? Well, they're pretending that's not even happening. In fact, you can still buy, you know, a fish or seafood dinner at any of the big restaurants, and most of it comes from, you know, around by the Pacific Ocean, which is highly contaminated. They don't want to talk about it because they would rather just not talk about it and hope it goes away. But the reality is you're still consuming those accumulative chemicals that over the long term have a real effect on your health. But they're not talking about that. So they'll come around and they'll regulate the hell out of your industry or my industry. But on the bigger industries where there's just bazillions of dollars being made, they're getting bribed and paid off and looking the other way. So what good is it really to have all these oppressive regulation organizations that are really hurting the little guys and kind of looking the other way and giving a pass to the bigger companies? So I think deregulation is good. I think somebody needs to be watching it and making sure they're not deregulating something important, you know, that could be life-threatening. But on the other hand, you look at the FDA and some of what they're telling us to eat. You know, for years, you know, peanut oil was the greatest thing on earth. And then, oh, don't eat peanut oil. It goes right to your arteries. And then go ahead and eat peanut oil. It seems to be fine. You know, eat carbs. Don't eat carbs. Drink raw milk. Don't drink raw milk. We're going to arrest a bunch of Amish people because they produce raw milk. And I just wonder, you know, what good is it other than give my Uncle Bob a job kind of program by these politicians and bureaucrats that just want to continue to increase their numbers, their budget, and their power and authority over us. So whether you like Trump or not is really irrelevant. And I'm not sure of my complete listener base, but I'm sure a lot of people are happy that Trump won and a lot of people are not. But he's the president. That's the way it is. So get behind it. Not, you don't have to be supportive, but you just have to sit there and go, well, this is the new norm for the next 4 years. So I'm going to learn to deal with it just like I learned to deal with Obama. I learned to deal with Bush. I learned to deal with, you know, Clinton and the other Bush and everyone. You know, they just come in and then they do their thing and America continues to move on and you just adapt and overcome. So, you know, Trump won the election. That's the end of the debate. You know, you can get into the whole, well, he didn't win the popular vote argument, but we are not a democracy, and that is not how it works. We are a representative republic, and we have an electoral college, and that was the way it was set up, and that's the way it works. And if you look at the math and how it really works in the electoral college, your vote does count. It counts down to your precinct level. It's so accurate the way it works. So if we went with popular vote, New York and California and maybe one other state would pick our president, and the rest of us could all just set that one out and have a beer. But because of the Electoral College, Podunk Nowhere USA, and there are 200 people that live in that precinct, they vote, and that precinct vote is counted toward the electoral vote, and your vote does count. So this is how it was set up. It was set up for a reason. And it really works, and the founders were not just a bunch of rich, arrogant pricks. Slave owners, let's throw that in there too, so we can cover all the bases from all the haters. If you analyze the Constitution and how it really works, going back to the way it was written, and you factor in the words they used, and all the words were weighed and measured, and they used the right words to get their point across, most of the problems we see in the news and on Facebook and social media would really all kind of go away if we were following the Constitution. And let me explain that maybe in a way to where most of us car enthusiasts will understand. If you have a new, let's just pick Mercedes, they're a smooth-running car at extremely high rates of speed, and an American car can go 120, 130 miles an hour. But we're muscle car kind of people. So it'll go that fast for an hour or two and then it'll seize up and blow up. A Mercedes will go 130 miles an hour all day, every day, and after 5 years still be running smooth and be pretty much problem free. Service is a little more expensive on those cars, but they're precision built. I was talking to a German engineer the other day and, he was telling me that they don't have plus or minus specifications. They measure in units called a mu. I guess it was kind of like I asked him, is it like meow, but a mu? And he goes, well, no, he kept saying it, but it's German. I didn't understand it, but it's mu. And he said, that's a millionth of a centimeter or something. He goes, they take this thing. So they're not measuring in thousandths of an inch. They're measuring in millionths. And he goes, so if you make a part that is spec'd at so many mews, that's the spec. If it's over or under, they just throw it out. And that's great for a car, you know. But if you're going to service that car, then you just can't have a shade tree mechanic filing off a part trying to make it fit. So all Mercedes haters or lovers alike, let's just set that aside. And let's say you have a new Mercedes-Benz that's built to very good standards and it's made to run in a very long time, like the Constitution. Now, if over 100 years, or let's just say 50 years, because we're talking about a car here, if the owner of that car doesn't maintain it and doesn't keep it running properly and doesn't fix the things that go wrong back to the original specifications, then when you buy it, you're going to be going, this thing's a rattle bucket. What a piece of shit. And because maybe you understand automobiles and the industry, you might go, well, it needs some TLC and it needs to be rebuilt. But it would be unfair for your friend to come along and go, man, these Mercedes are pieces of shit. I mean, it's rattling at 30 miles an hour. The brakes barely work. It squeaks. All the seals are whistling and stuff because I'm never going to buy a Mercedes. Well, would that be fair? I mean, would that be fair to the original vehicle that was built to really high standards and tolerances just because somebody else neglected it? No, I don't think so. It'd be an unfair judgment. So when people look at the United States and the Constitution, they're looking at it 200 and some years later going, well, what a piece of shit. Who would want to have a constitution like America's? Oh, well, if we would have maintained it and kept it up to specs and were following it word for word the way it was meant to be, then they might have a different opinion of it. But they're judging it on 200 years of neglect. And so when we look at some of the things like the Electoral College, we might think, well, that's a stupid idea. But if we were really following it and understood it and why that piece was added to it, then we would go, oh, well, since we maintained it properly, I really see the purpose in it. So that's my comparison. And I'm always throwing cars around with everything I try to analyze because we understand, you know, vehicles and stuff like that and engines and stuff. So that's why I always use them when I'm comparing our bodies to a gasoline engine because it runs on a certain fuel. Well, the same with the Constitution. You can't look at it and judge it for the way it's been maintained. You have to look back at the way it was built and how good would it be if we had not neglected it. And that's what we've done in this country. And, you know, I was talking to my wife the other day and we were having breakfast because it was Sunday and we're relaxing. And we were talking about something and I go, you know, it's funny how many of these problems that we look at in the news, because we were watching the news the night before, and I go, that would go away if we just followed, you know, the Constitution and went by the way it's supposed to work. And she's like, well, how would that fix that? And I go, well, technically the 12th Amendment was how we elect a president. And they modified it a little bit by saying, well, the vice president should be picked through the Electoral College the same way as the president, because the vice president may become president if something happens to the president of the United States. So the standard should be as high. So he should be a natural born citizen. He should be elected by so much of a percentage in all of the rules that apply to the president. And then that was kind of the 12th Amendment kind of actually added higher standards to that part in the vehicle, our Constitution. Well, then along came the 17th Amendment. And what they did with that was they were like, well, you know, they just kind of screwed everything up because, you know, FDR was a screaming jackass. And so originally, and I've talked about this before, so I won't go into it in great detail, but, you know, the Congress were your representatives. Podunk Nowhere USA. You 200-300 people would get together and in your precinct or your district would elect Bob over there. Bob's a cool guy. And he became your representative. And a state had a lot of representatives for every district. And there was not gerrymandering going on. So your district really represented your community, whether you were logging or farming or ranching or industry or manufacturing or textile. Pretty much everyone in that district kind of lived there and worked there because that was their hometown. That's where they put down roots. And it was very, I don't know, it just everybody kind of felt the same way on the same page. That's why they ended up in that little district. So then you elect Bob and Bob goes to the state as your representative. So when they're discussing issues about taxation, property taxes, building roads, anything, Bob would go, well, we're really not into that because it doesn't affect us. And we're going to vote no on it. No big deal. And everybody was like, yeah, I kind of get that, you know, because it doesn't fit for your community, your district. And then all the district or congressmen would get together, and then they would pretty much decide on issues that affected districts as a state, you know, so maybe taxation or some form of regulation or something. And it was more represented because you had talked to Bob at church or school or at a camping. And so everyone was represented. You and your family were represented through Bob because Bob knew you. You guys went to school together. So then all of the congressmen would get together at the state level, and then they would say, well, we need two senators. All of the people, all of the Bobs, would pick two senators. They weren't elected by you and me, people that have no clue what the hell is going on. They were just picked, and they were always in a state of recall, which meant we're going to send Jane and Frank as our senators of the state to Washington to tell the president whether we're for or against something and what to do and not to do. And then they went home. So they didn't live in Washington, D.C., and neither did your congressman. You know, they kept business at a state and local level, and then Washington, D.C. did its minor few jobs, and nobody needed to be there. So if Jane or Frank decided to go to Washington, D.C. and screw all of the congressmen by telling the president the will of the people in the state something wrong, back then they were just recalled, which was probably, you know, through a messenger on a horse, and that took some time. But nowadays you would just call up Jane or Frank and go, hey, you've been recalled. Get your happy ass back home. And there was no debate. That was it. Their job had ended. They were recalled. There was no talk to HR about it and being written up three or four times. You the people have decided you've been recalled. Thanks, but no thanks. Come back home. Go back to work. You know, whatever it was you were doing before, you know, we asked you to do this, which wasn't a full-time job anyway. So they just went back home and went back to farming or whatever they did. And then they would just pick another one. That was it. So a guy like in my state, John McCain, who's just a long in the tooth, pain in the ass, doesn't listen to the people, guy gets elected every 6 years. And all he's got to do is talk shit, you know, the last year to get reelected. And he's voted on by the people. Well, the people don't understand what's going on half the time. You know, that's why we hired a congressman, because we're busy. We're working. We're ranching. We're doing our shit. And then Bob, we meet with him every once in a while and tell him the pulse of what the community's thinking. And then Bob goes, yeah, and then talks to other people. So that way we can continue to work and do our job while he takes time out of his business to go to the state and express our opinion. And then he comes home because it's that kind of job. It wasn't that complicated. Well, the 17th Amendment made it to where we now elect senators. And we took it out of the power of the people and gave it to the people through popular vote, which is kind of seems like an oxymoron. So they marketed it in a way to where these recalls were slowing down the workflow of Washington, because these people in the Senate were getting recalled, and then it might be another recess before they got another senator in there to take his place. So they made it seem like it was a big holdup on Washington, D.C. Oh my God, we're sitting around for years without a senator to represent. But that's not how it worked. But that was the sales marketing strategy to get the 17th Amendment passed. And then the people went, well, I'm still voting for the guy, so that's cool. My vote still counts. But you really took it away from the one guy that was elected to do that job, which was your congressman. Because congressmen were more aware on the mechanisms that control our lives at a local level. So you could still tell Bob, hey, John McCain's got to go. And he's like, yeah, we all agree here. And then he would go to the state and find out that all the precincts think John McCain's got to go. Well, that was better that way, because when you have an election, then all of a sudden you wake up a bunch of sleeping people every 6 years and go, hey, John McCain's running for Senate again. Well, what's he done lately? Well, he's done this and that. And depending on who he's talking to, he's done some really great shit. And then when he's talking to the next group of people, he's done other really cool shit. But in reality, he hasn't done nothing that the Congress has asked him to do. And so even though you're still voting for your senator, you're not really voting for your senator because you're being lied to, because it's just, you know, it's like saying everybody picked McDonald's for lunch. Well, not really everybody wanted McDonald's, but it just seemed like a consensus based on the spin. So that's how things have been neglected and kind of need to be not just readjusted, but removed and taken back to the original specifications. And then all of our problems would go away because now our senators and congressmen are listening to us, the people. But they've removed that us, the people, from the equation by putting it up for popular vote for the senator. And now Congress has been pretty much marginalized into just a bunch of yahoos that don't know shit. And the Senate has done that along with the president. So now you listen to senators in their confirmation hearings speaking as if they work for Washington, D.C. and not the people. And if you watch any of the confirmation hearings and you listen to what your senator is saying, is he really saying what you and your congressman think? Probably not most of the time. But he'll be saying, well, we've set up these laws, and are you going to follow them if we confirm you? Well, who's we? Washington, D.C. And I learned that watching, you know, some of the Senate hearings on Voss for, you know, the school secretary. And all these senators were saying, well, we have all these federal laws, and are you going to follow them? It's like, wait a minute. States don't follow federal law, and neither should senators, and they shouldn't be echoing back what Washington wants the people to do. They're supposed to be echoing to Washington what we want them to do. So you see this little flip, and it doesn't seem all that big of a deal until you really analyze what's really happening, and you go, wait a minute, where'd my voice go? My voice was to the Congress, and then Congress told the Senate what to say, and then the Senate, the two senators, instead of 500-600 congressmen having to all trek to Washington, D.C. back in the day, just two people from every state went there and said, my state's pretty much on the page that this is BS, so no thank you. And then they would go back home. They'd take care of other business. But so it was just an easier way to get the 5 million people in your state to talk to a couple hundred representatives to narrow that down or run it through the funnel to get it to two people. And then two people took the majority of the will of that state, the 5 million, and went to Washington, and both of them said no or yes. Or, you know, half of the state, the other senator, because it's usually, you know, this part of the state and that part of the state, says yes. Okay, then those two votes will cancel each other out. Okay, fine. But a yes vote or a no vote is way better than a whole bunch of paid for yes votes based on, you know, who whatever lobbyist is in John McCain's pocket. I pick on John McCain because he's my senator, and I can't stand them. I don't know about your senator and where you live, but the system was set up to be awesome. And then they just all effed it all up. So I'm happy that we have Donald Trump quit whining about the majority of the people and all that, and just get on with life, get over it, move on, and then use the tools that this new guy is bringing to the table to further your project. Don't complain that you wish you had other tools. These are the tools now that you have. Work with him to get these tools to do a better job for America. So anyway, that's my take on some of the politics that's been going on and with all the haters and whiners out there. And yeah, granted, half of America don't like Trump. And that's fine. You know, half of America or a big percentage of Americans didn't like Obama or Bush or Clinton. You know, that's just numbers and math. And we as a people and a nation must get past it and just go, okay, well, what do we have to work with now? So I'm going to take a little break, and then I want to talk about some of the stuff I've been up to and some of my plans and bounce it off of you and some of the ideas I have. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Preppers should always be prepared, and the Prepper Guy can help you find the supplies you need without having to get lost in a big box store or on a website designed to sell you everything else. Our online store offers a focused shopping experience, making it easy to zoom in to find what you need. Because we affiliate with Amazon to deliver our goods around the world, you'll always find the best values too. Find what you need at doomsdaydepot.com. Remember, that's Doomsday with a Z, where you can zoom in to find what you need and learn more at prepperguy.com too.
Okay, so I wanted to talk a little bit about some of what I'm doing now with my websites. I still have Prepper Guy, obviously, and that's the main one. I enjoy doing that, and that's why I want to get into doing Udemy. I can never pronounce that .com and doing some classes there, because the reason I started Prepper Guy and podcasting was because I like just trying to teach people some of the stuff I've learned over life, whether it's prepping or nutrition and stuff. And yeah, I'm not a doctor and I'm not an expert survival seer training and all that stuff, but I do like teaching some of the things I've learned. And I hope these podcasts kind of help, because I definitely have a different way of looking at being prepared, you know, more of being prepared for anything, not just something. And whether it's a road trip or camping trip or the end of the world, you know, being prepared to me is really learning a lot of things, whether the learning the things on construction or anything, welding, manufacturing, you pick up skills that apply to being prepared and survival. Because if you know basics on framing and a little bit of construction, then you can build anything, whether it's a down and dirty debris shelter or a bigger type of shelter for you and more people, like a, you know, your family and stuff, you know, that you start with the bigger logs first and you make sure they're well supported, and then you go down to smaller ones for cross beams and, you know, if that's what you want to call them, and then lighter material. If you understand water abatement and rain drainage, then you can layer the debris on your shelter, whether it's leaves or bark or moss, in a way to where the water doesn't run into your shelter but off of your shelter. And then if you build the shelter in the right place, then the water doesn't run off of the roof of your shelter and then right back under your shelter. It should drain properly away from you and keep you dry. You know, if you understand basics of things like that and how stuff works, then you can have a small fireplace inside your shelter to where you don't get smoked out or start a fire or, you know, get all messed up. So I like teaching. I've always enjoyed it. Even when I was active in church, I enjoyed Sunday school teaching the 14 and 15 year olds, you know, just different ways to look at things, whether it's religion or life or morality, anything. And so that's why I'm taking my focus that way. And that's why I started Prepper Guy and doing podcasting, was to tell people my way of looking at things. Doesn't make me right. It's just an alternate way of just figuring shit out. Many of you know that I had the Sovereign State Project, which was my politically charged website, because I believe in states' rights, not in a negative, horrible way that everyone thinks of, like going back to the Civil War and slavery, but just states' rights. We are sovereign as a people and as a state, and we don't really answer to the federal government. The federal government answers to us. But I've come to the conclusion that no one gives a shit, and you're not going to unscramble a scrambled egg, and we have gone way too far past the point of no return in America. Like just what I was talking about with the 12th and 17th Amendment, the car, it needs a complete overhaul. And that's just not going to happen, because you have, you know, 600 million people in America and 300 million of them vote, let's say, and each one of them has a different view. So when you talk about removing safety nets, some people are like, yeah, it's my tax dollars and I don't want to pay for it. And then the same person in another breath will go, but thank God my mother had, you know, Social Security. Well, she didn't have it. It was stolen from her, you know, but it becomes a safety net. and you're forced to pay into it, and then you have to fall back on it because they've taken so much of your money that you can't have any private retirement worth a shit unless you're making a lot of money, and then it doesn't affect you. So we're never going to rebuild this country. We're going to try to fix it and keep it running, but I don't see the things that I was upset about ever getting rectified, and I'll continue to talk about them, but Sovereign State Project was a fun thing to do. And I set up all these websites really more of a hobby. I enjoy making websites, building them, creating them, designing logos, getting them up and running. And if they get some traction, then yeah, sure, I'll keep doing it because it's fun. Just the same as if I, you know, were to play golf. You know, if I'm not doing it to make money, I'm not a pro golfer. I just do it because it's a hobby. And if there's traction and people enjoy it, then I'll continue to do it. But eventually, you know, I want to up my game and do something else. So then I started another website and then another one. So Sovereign State Project, I own the name and I have the website. And if anybody would like to take that and run with it, you know, just send me an email, mark@prepperguy.com. And we can work something out because it's got a good name. And I think, you know, somebody that's really into maybe younger and wants to try to teach states' rights and sovereignty in a way and get things going, let me know and we'll work something out. Then I started TiotWaki.com, which is an acronym for the end of the world as we know it, channel.com. And that was something I kind of wanted to do for people in the prepping community that are content providers for YouTube and stuff. But when I got it going, YouTube, well, YouTube's still got their algorithm problems and they're really screwing with monetization and making it kind of hard for content creators to make the money they were making, which forces people to go into Patreon and GoFundMe accounts to get a little bit more money to keep the lights on. And so I thought, you know, if we had our own channel, even though it's just a website, and we really promoted our stuff and we made really good content, it's still hosted on YouTube, but you can set up your own advertising channels. You don't have to be a partnership with some, advertising group or something like that to where you make a little bit more money, because they're still taking a big percentage of the money made from advertising on your content. And if you're getting a couple hundred thousand views on a video, a lot of top shows on TV that we watch on some of these cable channels might not get a couple hundred thousand views per episode, but yet they're getting paid really well from advertising. So, you know, some of the late night shows like Conan and these guys, they would kill for 1 million views per episode. And yet they're making 14, 15 million a year with those kind of numbers. So who's lining their pocket with all these views? It should be you. And so, you know, if you make a good YouTube video and you have a good following and say every week you produce a really good, I'm going to call it an episode, but it's your show. It's something you do, whether it has to do with prepping or camping or hiking or hunting. And you keep it fairly consistent and really good quality, and you're getting 1 million views, you should be able to get some pretty good advertising dollar instead of YouTube giving you 10 cents on a dollar. So I thought, well, why don't we do something like this and put together some shows? And I got the website all set up and it works really good for video sharing and stuff. If you're hosting on Vimeo, Daily Motion, or YouTube, we can put it on the TiotWaki channel. .com and set up its own little menu item for shows, just like on Discovery Channel. You go to their website and it says the shows, you know, Made in Cast in Iron or whatever it is, and all these shows they have, and you have your own page and people watch your episodes. But it gives you the freedom, instead of worrying about some groupthink mentality, to where you can actually talk to friends in business that you know that make knives or make camping gear or hiking gear or bow hunting gear, and go, hey, I get these many views and I would like to have you be an advertiser on my show. And it's not that hard to talk to them if they're people you know or even people that you've just associated with. I mean, I got together with Pack Rabbit, which makes a really sweet backpack frame, and you know, it's mainly the frame, but then they have packs too, and I really like it. So when I started the 72-hour bug out challenge, I contacted the guy that I had talked to before I bought my pack from him and said, hey, I'm throwing together this thing. It's kind of a challenge. And the way I have it set up, I'd like to have a winner each year. And I wonder if you would sponsor a prize. It's not going to cost you anything. And if it gets going and there's a winner, then yeah, there'll be a prize that you will donate. If we get the numbers and all that, if it doesn't take off and get traction, then you're out nothing. And they were like, yeah, we would love to. They sent me a bunch of promotional information to where I could use their logo and stuff on my material. They decided to donate a really sweet Pack Rabbit frame, which is like $100 and some you know, giveaway. Now it didn't get any traction, but I still sponsor and promote them on all my stuff. And I don't expect nothing out of them. But the takeaway was it was really easy to contact them. I didn't have to be a PR firm or be all that high tech of a guy. I just said, hey, this is what I'm trying to do. Is that something you'd be interested in? So if you know someone that makes really nice knives and you contact them and say, hey, I bought 3 or 4 of your knives. They're really great. I see you advertise. Would you consider having a small ad on one of my videos and you pay me directly instead of through some agency? Odds are they're going to go, well, let's talk. You know, what do you got in mind? And so if you have a 30-minute video and you put 5 or 6 ads in it, which is unheard of low number of advertising in a show on TV, you look at an hour show, there's, you know, almost 15 minutes of advertising. That's 30 to 45 ads in that program. Each one of them are paying a shit ton of money. So if you go to 3 or 4 people and go, hey, I'm going to advertise you this way. I'm not going to interrupt my program to run a commercial because that's annoying and no one likes it. But I'm going to have like a little blurb on the bottom, like a pop-up bubble. So when I'm doing my video, I will talk about you, like a lot of the sponsored videos you see on YouTube now. They go, we want to thank our sponsor. And so if you're using that knife and everything you do and you're out camping, you go, this is the knife, da, da, da. And while you're talking about using your knife, you're not talking about the brand. You're just talking about using your knife to cut this cordage or gut this fish or whatever it is you're doing. There's that little blurb, that bubble pops up and says, get your kick-ass, sweet-ass knife from this guy. And then he just pays you whether they click on it or not because it's an advertisement. So that was my idea with the Teotwaki channel. And like I say, you know, it's got some traction, but I just don't push it because I actually put it together just as a project and I like doing shit. And then there it sets and, you know, it's not gone and I'll continue to work it. And if it gets some momentum and people start catching the vision, then we will promote the shit out of it. So that's something I was doing. And then the 72-hour bug out challenge, I don't know if winter hit and nobody was, you know, all into going bugging out for 72 hours. But we got that one. So what I'm doing is kind of streamlining a little bit with Prepper Guy, cutting back on a lot of the stress level. And then that way I can do a podcast a little bit more regularly and take the time to edit it and get it uploaded and all that. So some of the websites, and if you have any questions or ideas or input or something you'd like to do or see, or if you'd like to take over, you know, one of my websites because you think it's a great idea, like teotwakichannel.com or the 72hourbugoutchannel.com, let me know. We'll work together. I'm not a dick. I'm a nice guy. I like helping people out, and if they help me out and everyone gets something out of the deal, sweet. I'm not into it for the money. I'm into it for the enjoyment of making changes in certain industries that I feel need a change and that we can maybe exact that change. So some of the stuff I'm going to start doing a little bit more of is I'm working in my shop to build a metalworking area because I like knives. I'm a edged weapon kind of guy. I don't use them. I don't know a lot about them, but I just think they're cool as shit. And so I want to make some. And so I'll probably record some of that. So I'm building a 72-inch belt grinder, and so I'm going to have some videos on that. But a lot of those will be more like videos, and I think I'm actually going to set up my cameras in the shop to where I have three or four different angles to where when I'm doing something, I can just turn them all on and then do what I'm doing. And then I have a lav mic that I can wear now and do my audio that way. So I'll be promoting a lot of video content on YouTube, but I'm keeping everything under the Prepper Guy banner, basically, because all these other channels got complicated and it's just way too much work. It's a hobby, not supposed to be work. So that's kind of what I'm doing. And then, like I said, we're going to still not talk about politics as much and that and just kind of prepping. But all this is for, you know, to me is all about prepping, whether I'm building websites and then I know a lot about audio and video. And then maybe if I was in an industry where I lost my job, I could take that knowledge and apply it to a YouTube channel or something to where I could maybe make a little extra pocket money or do something like that for friends, you know, that maybe want to do a podcast and don't know how to do it and pay me a few bucks to, you know, make ends meet and keep my lights on. So to me, it's prepping, you know, it's just an unforeseen thing that you're prepping for. But if you have those skills and that knowledge, then you can use them somewhere else. And if you really like what you're doing, then the money always follows. So I'm not going to get into knife making to become a knife maker, but I'm going to make knives and they'll mostly be for gifts. But in doing that, I had to learn how to etch knives. And so I'm set up to do that. And so that way I can have fun making a really sweet looking knife with a really cool etched logo on it that looks really professional. And then I'll probably give them away as gifts or something. Or if in one of my videos, I might say this knife's for sale. If you want to buy it, let me know. But I'm not going into it to become the knife maker guy. I'm just going into it because I like building shit. My wife was like, why are you building that 72-inch grinder? And it's like, you know what? That thing might just sit in the barn and collect rust for the next 50 years. I'm just building it because I want to build something. I don't care what it is. You know, I build a guest house, you know, a little casita, you know, in our backyard. It gets used maybe once or twice a year. It wasn't the point to have guests over more often. It was just the point of building it and learning all that fun stuff about doing it. Now, yeah, it ups the property value, but that's not what it's all about. It was just about building it. If I'm going to add on to my house, I'm going to add on to my house. I'm not going to pay someone to do it. So if I want to dig a basement, then that means I'm going to need to learn how to dig a basement. I might have to, you know, get a tractor, rent a tractor to do it. And in doing that, I'll have to learn water abatement and drainage and waterproofing and structural things and stuff. But that's the fun of the project. Once it's all done, then it'll just sit there like any other part of my house and it'll never get used. And, or, you know, part of it'll get used and they'll go, oh, that's really cool. But it's not like a something I'm going to use every damn day. It's just the process is what I'm into. So that might kind of explain why I fall in and out of getting regular podcasts, because I'm always jumping around like a freaking ferret on cocaine or something and very unfocused. But it's because I'm doing stuff. You know, I learned to silkscreen because I wanted a shirt with my name on it. So why buy one when I can buy some silkscreening equipment for $100 and make my own? You know, if I want to weld, I'm going to get a welder and then I'm going to learn to weld and I'll watch a million welding videos until I can weld what I wanted to weld. So I've put together some steel beams for under my house one time and I fixed up a trailer. And that's about it. But I have a welder now and I know how to use it. So that to me is prepping. Because we can't prep for any one specific thing because we don't know what it will be. We're pretty sure that whatever it is, it's going to suck. And we're going to kind of be on our own, or what do they call that? Yo-yo time. You're on your own time, you know. And so getting food won't be just running to Walmart or, you know, whatever big supermarket you shop at and getting food. And when you think about how many times you go to the store in a week, if that wasn't there, well, you'd think, well, good, I don't have to go to the store as often. But why do you go to the store? We ran out of this, we ran out of that. And so then you're going to be on your own, so that the store will be cleared out. Will you have made adjustments in your lifestyle to where if you had to live without cigarettes or coffee or whatever it is you enjoy, your comfort food, would you be able to do without them by quitting those habits or changing those habits or modifying those things and those desires to where if they were gone, you would still be okay? And that's why I talk about health and nutrition so much, because in reality, most preppers will die of diabetes or heart failure or something like that long before a zombie apocalypse or any apocalypse hits America. So being healthy is very important. You know, yeah, sure, being in shape, you know, most of these preppers talk about doing, you know, rucks and marching and tactical training and all this stuff. And that's a physical training, which is good to be in shape physically. But what about your underlying health? You know, do you have issues that require medication that's extremely specialized? And I'm not talking about some kind of rare, weird, you know, Andromeda strain type of disease. I'm talking about diabetes. If you have to take insulin, that stuff is made in four or five different countries, and it goes through a very controlled temperature and sterilization process before it ends up at the drugstore. So if the systems collapse, you're not going to see that anymore. It's going to go away. So you can either learn through nutrition to get your diabetes under control and not have it get worse and worse, but maybe progressively better and better. If you're always going to be on insulin, there's actually ways that a person can make their own insulin, but it requires some skill, probably some knowledge, and probably some specialized equipment, but it's not so dramatic of equipment that you would have to open your own laboratory research center. You just get the recipe, and I'm sure it's pretty much, you know, some beakers and some stuff like that, which we can all buy. And if it's something you're going to have to live on and require, then it would be nice to know what you need and to have that in supply to make your own if you needed to. Now, I'm not saying you're going to get off of, you know, purchasing insulin, but it would be nice to know that if you couldn't purchase it, you had an option to make your own. Probably not as great as the shit you get from the pharmacist, but you know what? It might be enough to keep you or someone in your family alive. And if you research it, you'll find out that it's probably not that damn complicated. The complication is that it's logistics. You know, it's made in Israel, the bags are made in Israel, and this is made in some other country, and that's made here, and the shipping and the trucking and the logistics to get it to you, and all of the temperature controls and stuff to get it to you to where its shelf life is still valuable when you get it, or viable when you get it. Well, if you're making it in your kitchen, do you need all that equipment? No, you probably just need some stuff. And in one of the books, it's an old book, Lucifer's Hammer, you know, one of the guys in it has to make his own insulin. But because there's so many disasters going on, you know, by the time he gets to where he's set up to where he can make his own, he ends up dying, not having insulin, because so much other stuff was going on and he needed to gather all this stuff, which he didn't have. So if you had it, you could probably make it. I mean, if someone can make something, so can you. So health is very important, and not just health like, oh, I go to the gym every week. Well, good for you, but what about your diet? Are you eating the wrong food? And I'm not being objective here or abstract. There is a right food and a wrong food for your body. I don't give a damn about all the gurus and the happy moonshine naysayers that, you know, are into plants or mushrooms and all this shit. Your body is a processing plant, the same as your car. And if you put the wrong gas in it, it doesn't run good. And if you put the right gas in it, it does run good. It's as simple as that. So there's a ton of research out there on both sides of the equation. I don't give a shit. I've run the test on myself because I'm my own guinea pig. I've found a good diet that makes me feel good. I have a lot of energy at 62, almost 63 years old. I take no medications, and I haven't been to a doctor in 5 or 6 years, and that was for a surgery, which if I could have done it myself, I probably would have. So there is a right and a wrong way to do pretty much everything in life. And the easiest way to determine what that is to know the outcome. So if I'm painting and I know what outcome I want and I'm applying the paint and I am not getting the outcome I want, then I must be doing it wrong. So then I research a little more until I find out the little trick and go, oh shit, I should have been doing that. And when I'm done, it turns out the way I want it. And it's not just some abstract way that I want it. It's just pictures or something I've seen. So I know it can be accomplished. I'm just doing it wrong. So I need to learn the right way. So it's the same with everything. And nutrition is the same way. I had joint pain. So I read a lot. I wanted to live a life without joint pain. So I figured it out. I tried a few things and I still had joint pain. I was doing it wrong. I figured out how to do it a different way. I tried that for a couple weeks and my joint pain went away. That must be the right way because I don't experience joint pain anymore. I had IBS. Well, I know I can live a happy life without IBS because a lot of people don't have irritable bowel syndrome. So I was doing something wrong because I had irritable bowel syndrome. So I researched, I read, I studied, I changed and tweaked my diet, and all of a sudden, what I was doing started working. And so that must have been the right way to do it. You see where I'm kind of going with this? So it's not that you need to have a master's degree in everything that afflicts your life. You just need to know what is the right way and the wrong way. Now, yeah, the right way to get to Mars might be something you and I can't figure out. But you can look at things in life and go, that's really cool. Somebody else has done it, so therefore so can I. So I'm going to try to do it myself. So with research and study, you can try a few things and you go, that didn't work. Must have been the wrong way to do it. And as you learn and you adapt and you fix what you did wrong, eventually you will find the right way and then you're done. And then you can move on to the next challenge in life. So in prepping, it's all about finding the right way, whether it's dealing with people, dealing with looters, dealing with marauders, dealing with zombies. There's going to be a right way and a wrong way. And the wrong way in a survival situation might get you killed, and the right way will keep you alive. Dealing with police, there's a right way and a wrong way. A lot of people do it the wrong way and end up getting shot or arrested. Why? Because not because of the color of their skin, but because maybe they were doing it the wrong way and were assholes. See, because a cop is not a judge. A cop is a police officer. He comes up to you and says, dude, I saw you do something wrong. I'm going to write you a ticket for what I perceive to be something you didn't do correctly. And then if you have a question about it, you will take that up with the judge because that's his job to judge the merits of what I'm saying. But if you sit there and argue with the cop, you might get shot. It's not his job to sit there and explain to you why you're wrong and he's right. He just says, I saw something I have a concern about, and I think it's a safety issue, and I'm going to write you a ticket for going too fast under the conditions that I observed. And you go, oh, okay, see you in court. You don't have to be a dick. He just saw something. That's his job, to be observant. Now, I'm not saying all cops are stellar above board. But hey, I'm in the floor covering industry, and I can pretty much say not all floor covering installers are stellar or exemplary either. And I'm sure in your business, there's a bunch of F-ups that probably shouldn't be working there. But the reality is, any industry can have a couple screw-ups in it. And that will take us back to the Constitution, because if the police departments are screwing up, it's the sheriff's job to correct that, because you elect the sheriff. He is the law dog. He is over all law enforcement. Anyone writes a ticket is using his authority. They're borrowing his badge to write you a ticket. And if that cop is being a dick, in spite of what they tell you about being trained and they work for the city and blah, 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 their authority, the actual lineage of authority comes from the sheriff because he is elected in your county. He is lending it to them. They've screwed it all up, which is another part of the scrambled egg that we will never unscramble. But, you know, this is how it should work. But don't argue with a cop. Argue with a cop is kind of like arguing with your spouse. It's not going to end well. Just accept the consequences, say you're sorry, and move on, and then go to the judge. So these are how we analyze problems. And as preppers, there may be quite a few problems in life that we will have to deal with. And so how do we deal with them? We look for what we want to be the right outcome that will fit our needs, our family's needs, or whatever it may be. And then you go, is this possible to achieve? Well, yes, it is, because people have done it in the past. Okay, then there's a way they did it that I don't understand yet. Okay, what was that? Well, what did they do? Well, they used to do this and this and this. Oh, okay, well, I'm going to try it. And then you screw up a few times and you go, well, that wasn't right. And eventually you figure out the right way because it works. See, the right way works and the wrong way don't. So that's my take on everything that I've been up to. I know it doesn't make sense, but then, hey, that's keeping with my podcast. So I have a bunch of websites I'm kind of not closing down, but I'm ignoring. Prepper Guy will still be there. I don't post a lot on there because, if I want to post random stupid shit, that's what Facebook is about. I piss people off on Facebook all the time. So you can follow me on Facebook at Prepper Guy page, Prepper Guy group. My name is obviously Mark Boyle. You can find me there and then track me down. I'm sure there's links on my website if I've not forgotten to do that. So, you can go there and find me there. And see, I also have a nutritional page or group. I can't remember, the 20,000 year journey, which is all about nutrition. Not a big following on there because it's just a small group. If you have a question about health and nutrition or diet and you're having problems with something, post me something and I'll look it up and send you my 2 cents. Not a doctor. I've been told that 1,000 freaking times. I know I'm not a doctor because I don't own a private plane and a BMW. So I'm pretty sure I'm not a doctor, but I try to help people, point them in the direction that might help them with their problem. So go there, the 20,000 year journey on Facebook. I can't remember if it's a group or a page because I just set it up. And then, also there's a Teotwaki page and a 72 hour bug out challenge page. They throw shit randomly in there. And like I said, if there's no traction, I'll just close it all down because I don't really care. I did it because it was fun. And, obviously I know I'm not doing something right when it comes to internet marketing because I'm not getting a lot of traction. And if I was really into doing it right, I would fine tune it and hone it down. But like I said, it's a hobby. I enjoy the shit out of just putting stuff together. If it ever serves a purpose, I don't care about it. Sounds like my cat wants to be part of the conversation. So my dog is sleeping, my cat is being annoying, and then I have 2 miniature horses. That's the pet inventory around here for now. So as always, I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for listening. If you have any questions or comments, shoot me a line. The best way to get a hold of me, because through thick and thin, mark@prepperguy.com. always works, or you can track me down somewhere else. I hope you guys have a wonderful week, month, or whatever it is until I get back with you again. And keep prepping and enjoy the apocalypse. Talk to you later.